This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about evictions. A moratorium on evictions in Indiana ended last week, and many are worried that the ongoing pandemic could cause a wave of evictions across the state. If you have questions or comments on our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881 and leave a quick question or comment there. We'll do our best to get it into the conversation today. We would love to hear your voice in today's conversation. So call 866-476-3881 and leave us a voicemail. Joining me now is Andrew Bradley, Policy Director for Prosperity Indiana. Andrew, thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you so much, Matt. Good to be here.
So the eviction moratorium in Indiana ended last Friday, August 14th. Can you explain what the moratorium was and what effect it had?
Yes. Yeah, so the eviction moratorium, until it ended on last Friday, covered residential evictions and also foreclosures. So that would be not commercial properties, but the typical places where you think of where people live. Until last Friday, they were not allowed to start the court process to evict them or start moratoriums. Now, one case where that didn't take effect was some hotels and motels where people might be staying on a temporary basis or even on a longer term basis. Still, those hotels and motels weren't covered under that moratorium.
Uh-huh. Why did the moratorium end?
Well, it was a creation of Governor Holcomb, and it was extended a number of times. It started back in March when the public health emergency first began, and over a course of months, from time to time, he would announce at his weekly briefings that would extend, and that would take place through actual new executive orders. But he announced a couple weeks ago that he was going to allow it to expire, and it did expire. So now it's gone.
Do we know anything about what impact it's had now that the moratorium's ended?
Well, we're just starting to find that out. And our Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition partners have estimated that we're likely to see three or more separate waves of evictions happening in Indiana, starting with the first one when this moratorium lifts. There may be certain landlords that, you know, maybe have been just waiting for this date and are starting to file that. In fact, I was just talking with somebody I know from the legal aid sector, and they were looking just at Marion County, trying to scrape some of the data from the website, and were finding that this morning he had seen 299 cases that were filed for evictions over the past week. And later this afternoon, he checked again, and it was about 450. So those are starting to move rapidly. So that's the first wave of filings, people who have just been waiting for this moratorium to end. There may be other landlords who are, you know, trying to work with their tenants, but maybe running out of funds themselves and or patients. And as those tenants are losing their unemployment benefits, and if they're not able to secure rental assistance, that could be a second wave that we would anticipate continuing through the next month or so. Then longer term, we looked back at the Great Recession now a decade ago, and evictions were actually a lagging indicator. And the peak of evictions during the Great Recession happened about a year after the peak of unemployment claims. So if this past April holds and ends up being the peak of unemployment claims, we could still see a third and later wave of evictions happening sometime in 2021. The problem there is that could be long after any rental assistance is available, unless we see a longer term housing stability policy plan put into place.
You threw some numbers our way, and of course, those are the actual filings. Can we glean anything from those numbers to be able to tell how many Hoosiers are at risk of being evicted right now?
Well, those were just kind of a snapshot of some research that was happening in process. But the longer term data that we've been looking at shows that there could be over a quarter million Hoosiers who could be subject to evictions. And in fact, looking at some individual cases, it could end up being upwards over 500,000 or up to 720,000 individual Hoosiers who could be at risk of eviction throughout this process.
We are talking with Andrew Bradley, Policy Director for Prosperity Indiana, and today we're talking about evictions and the evictions moratorium that ended last week. So what options do people facing evictions or a potential eviction, what options do they have right now? How much assistance is out there?
Well, right now, the state's rental assistance program and portal is still live and accepting applications. And so, first of all, I'd recommend that any Hoosier who thinks they might be at risk to be familiar with those resources. And that website is www.indianahousingnow.org. And not only is that the portal to apply for rental assistance, but there's also some information and an FAQ from the state, from IHCDA. And this is what the governor has been talking about in terms of a state program. There's also a separate program for Indianapolis and Marion County, and that's available at www.indyrent.org. And that's the difference is due to some different pots of money that are coming from the CARES Act and the way that's distributed between city and state. But if you apply to one and you're meant for the other, they will cross-refer you to each other, and that's a good thing. So that's number one. Make sure that you're familiar with those resources. Folks from the legal aid sector also tell me that folks, renters, should definitely reach out to their landlords, ask to help make a payment plan. My recommendation is to do that in writing and try to really demonstrate that proactive effort that you have made every effort to try to pay your bills so that if it were to come to a case of eviction, that you have that paper trail showing that you've done everything you can.
President Trump signed an executive order last week. He said that he was, quote, stopping evictions and protecting people from evictions. Another quote. What was that order and what will it do?
Taking a closer look at that order, I rely on the folks from the National Low Income Housing Coalition. Their analysis is that it really directs several federal agencies to determine if there is a need for more resources and to direct resources at some point in the future. So really, there's nothing in that actual executive order that prevents any of the evictions that have already started in Indiana. So whether that will have some effect in the future, we're yet to see. But as of right now, it doesn't do anything for Hoosier renters.
All right. So back to Indiana and things that we could do here. So what are the ideal actions that Governor Holcomb could implement to help?
Well, our Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition has come up with what we called a housing stability yardstick. We had designed this before the moratorium was lifted. We were hoping that Indiana would meet certain measures before it would go forward with that moratorium. Unfortunately, that didn't happen, but I think there's still some of those points that could be used even today that would really help mitigate the number of evictions and risk of homelessness throughout the state. And one of those things includes appointing a housing stability task force. Right now, the decisions about funds that are being used for the rental assistance program are not being they're not including the voices of some of the most important people who are being impacted by those decisions. And that includes not just renters, but also landlords, investors, and also representatives from some of the hardest hit communities in the state. And that includes Black and Brown Hoosiers who have been subject to higher rates of infection from COVID, to job and income loss, and also to housing instability. So that's one thing we would like to see a housing stability task force put together who can help represent those needs. We also think that it's really important to have good data in terms of who's being impacted and where those dollars are going. And so more recently, we have recommended a housing stability dashboard be included in the state's COVID website. And that would help show the impact of eviction filings and evictions themselves, as well as provide an updated status of where the funds from the rental assistance program are going by county and by housing cost burden census tract. Something else we've called for recently, and actually since that moratorium has been lifted, is a court order from the Indiana Supreme Court to help regularize some of the recommendations made to the court by a task force that would help ensure that if evictions are filed, that renters in any part of the state would face the same set of circumstances when they go to court.
All right, just a little bit of time left, but I want to ask this. What kinds of consequences could we see with a wave of evictions across the state? This is an issue that, I mean, it definitely has rippling effects. What kind of consequences?
There's a number of consequences that are both short and long term that I think that Hoosiers and our policymakers need to be aware of as we're thinking long term about COVID recovery. And in the short term, there's a definite public health threat if folks end up being evicted by the hundreds and thousands in communities and across the state. And if you think about it, you know, COVID is still a very active public health threat right now. So if you have families who end up having to couch surf from place to place, that could end up exposing one member of the family. That turns into a family, which turns into a basically like a traveling group of folks throughout a community who could be spreading COVID or at least exposing that threat. And then if those folks end up needing to visit one of our homeless shelters, you're talking about the potential for additional community spread. And we think that has a real risk of throwing Indiana's COVID recovery into reverse. Now, long term, there are other threats in terms of evictions. Evictions cause damage to families even if they end up only being filed and not being processed through the court. That leaves a permanent economic stain on families' records. And we think that there's an opportunity to revisit the way that those cases stay on families' records. So long-term, that could end up damaging families economically, but also communities in the long-term by really destabilizing their self-sufficiency.
Andrew Bradley is Policy Director for Prosperity Indiana. Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
We'll be back after a quick break talking with more experts and advocates about evictions in Indiana. If you have questions or comments for the show, we're on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881, 866-476-3881. I'm Matt Pelser. Back in 90 seconds, this is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Today we're talking about evictions in Indiana. We would love your questions and comments on the topic. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana. You could also leave us a voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're joined now by four guests. Amy Nelson is Executive Director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. Amy, welcome back.
Thank you.
Laura Berry is Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Laura, welcome.
Thank you.
Carrie Hyatt Bennett is Legal Counsel for the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Carrie, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Matt.
Brandon Beeler is Director of the Housing Law Center at Indiana Legal Services. Brandon, thanks for coming on.
Hi, Matt. Thanks for the opportunity.
So, Amy, we'll start with you. What happens when an eviction is served against somebody?
You know, it has long-term impacts. First of all, it's finding new housing and the struggle that certainly comes with that, whether or not you have money for a new deposit, moving costs, all of which that comes into that. And then are you able to find somewhere else you can go to that you can afford that's within your budget, near your kids' school, whatever, you know, it might be related to that. But the other factor that we're going to see really impacting Hoosier households for years to come is the issue of how background checks are done in our state and across the country. Most larger property management companies use what's called a tenant screening company in order to evaluate whether or not they should approve a tenant for rental. And these companies just do a lot of different types of data collection. But as part of that, they also collect court records, including records on eviction. And one of the problems that fair housing groups across the country have identified is that these companies don't necessarily differentiate between a filed eviction and a court-ordered one. Hmm. So just the sheer act of somebody having an eviction filed against them, whether justified, whether they worked it out later with their landlord so it didn't go to ruling by a judge, maybe it was unfair, the filing that occurred, that's going to haunt them for years to come in their search to find new, safe, affordable housing.
Laura, how is the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence working on eviction issues? What are you focused on right now?
Yeah, Matt, great question. So we're working on it from a variety of fronts. First, you know, for domestic violence survivors, you know, the number one barrier that they face is financial stability to even get housing in the first place. So when they do get stable housing, you know, it's the number one reason they stay in a violent relationship. So once they have become stably housed, the eviction, the potential of eviction for them, their only option really is to go back to an abusive household. So we have a team of lawyers, Carrie, who is on here, who can speak to that, who are really working together with ILS, who is also on your call here, who can speak to that, to really work with survivors to help them with the eviction process and to do potential representation, because we have a series of contract attorneys and pro bono attorneys who can represent survivors. Because for them, it is really critical between safety for them and not just housing, but living back in a violent relationship.
So if we set aside the eviction angle for just a second, I want to talk about domestic violence. Do we know what kind of an effect the pandemic has had on domestic violence and maybe people's ability to get some help?
Well, absolutely. So there's a direct correlation between domestic violence and COVID and an increase in the number of domestic violence incidences and homicide during this period of time. So we've seen a significant increase because we know with economic downturn, social isolation, increased access to firearms, that always is a bad combination, which increases the rates that we're currently seeing. So with that happening in our communities right now, it is for us kind of a trifecta that is not a great one. And the services that we're trying to provide are even greater, and the need has been even greater. So it's critical for us, for the individuals that we've been able to stably house through a housing project that we have, through rapid rehousing, rental assistance, that we keep them stably housed. And with the moratorium lift right now, you know, we're really concerned that the violence is going to even increase for those survivors who may have to return to households where violence with other family members or those who have caused harm to them may be even more significant.
Okay, thanks for tying that back into the eviction issues. Carrie, what legal rights do tenants who are victims of domestic violence have in Indiana?
Oh, that's a very good question. Matt, first of all, on the eviction issue itself, one of the things we're trying to do on behalf of the coalition is to make sure that all of our domestic violence programs talk to the survivors that they're working with about exactly what an eviction is and what it is not, what is a legal eviction and what is an illegal eviction. So the information distribution is really helpful from the get-go. Make sure they know that locking someone out of an apartment is not a legal eviction. Make sure that they know that to be legally evicted from a residence, you have to have a court order and there has to be due process. So make sure that they know the difference between a legal eviction and an illegal eviction, and then we can provide survivors counsel to help them combat either. So that is huge, actually, especially right now with all of these evictions, because as both Laura said and Amy said, just the idea that you have an eviction on your record, even if it's a wrongful eviction, will literally prevent survivors from getting other housing. One of the other things that we're doing is we are creating settlement conference requests, written requests for a settlement conference for survivors to be able to use with their landlord. So instead of filing an eviction, the landlord sees this piece of paper that says, "Hi, my name's Carrie. I'm in apartment this, this, this. I realize I'm behind on my rent. I am respectfully requesting a settlement conference that we can work out a payment plan in lieu of you filing an eviction." Because if survivors do this, if they create that paper trail that they're trying to work it out with their landlord, it's pretty compelling evidence if that landlord chooses to go ahead and file an eviction. The Landlord-Tenant Task Force from the Indiana Supreme Court, that they released a report on July 29th of this year, the high court and subsequently the trial courts, they're sending that message: we have to be very careful about just evicting people willy-nilly, and you need to try to work it out if you can. So one of the things we're trying to do is make sure that survivors have that paper trail, so if they do end up going to court over an eviction, they can say, "I'm trying really hard to work it out," and that's really the best case scenario.
We're talking about evictions in Indiana less than a week after the eviction moratorium ended, and that happened last Friday. And we have with us Amy Nelson, Executive Director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana, Laura Berry, Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence, Carrie Hyatt-Bennett, who we just heard, is Legal Counsel for the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and Brandon Beeler is Director of the Housing Law Center at Indiana Legal Services. And we are looking for your input on the topic. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All in Indiana, or you can do what a listener named Danny did and leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Let's hear Danny now.
Hi, my name's Danny. I'm calling from Indianapolis, Indiana. I don't see how anybody could be in trouble for rent right now. With unemployment with an extra $600 plus what they were getting normally, they were $700 to $900 a week. I don't see how anybody could be in conviction thing right now. Unless they had made a job where they had to pay $2,000 or $3,000 above for a house payment. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. So, Amy, Danny brings up an interesting point in talking about how some people were doing better on unemployment than they were when they were working, and how could they then not pay their bills? Any response to Danny, Amy?
You know, I disagree with that. As a housing advocate, particularly in our state and our city, individuals were already extremely housing insecure going into the COVID pandemic. We have a serious housing affordability problem where so many Hoosier families, most of their income goes toward their housing-related costs as part of that. And then you deal, you know, with other issues that, you know, substandard housing, issues around eviction, things such as that. And here in the National Low Income Housing Coalition also issues a yearly report that basically shows individuals working full-time jobs here in Indianapolis and across our state can't afford an average priced apartment. Wages have not kept up to housing costs, which have been escalating, particularly the rental market, because coming out of the foreclosure crisis, we had so many empty houses sitting, and they're still sitting in a lot of our neighborhoods. Those individuals, most of them went into rental housing, and that has pushed our rental housing costs up. So I disagree that individuals, you know, are getting more money and then, you know, as part of the COVID-related process, they were already struggling to pay their bills. Then you have that job loss that came with COVID, and it's really made our Hoosier families even more insecure on meeting their day-to-day needs.
Brandon, we heard from Andrew Bradley in the first segment about this, but what are your thoughts on the state letting the eviction moratorium end as it did last week?
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Matt. You know, it's a challenge. You know, I don't know, at least from what we're hearing from our clients, you know, if it was quite the time to do it without having some systems set up in order to sort of protect tenants, especially the vulnerable ones. Sort of picking up on what Amy just discussed. I mean, Amy, I'm in complete agreement with Amy just from being on the ground and seeing what our, you know, what we see in our office with our clients. You know, not only, you know, and I'm sure listeners have seen, you know, unemployment lines and unemployment is kind of being tapped right now and really just being slow on getting processing claims as well as waiting for appeals for claims. So there's, you know, money out there that tenants may be entitled to maybe help with their costs, but they just haven't received them yet. In addition, I think Andrew did a great job discussing the rental assistance programs, the statewide one through IHCDA, which covers every county except Marion, and then obviously the Indianapolis Rental Assistance Program. You know, both of those programs, at least the Marion County one here in Indianapolis, you know, that's been paused for about 5 weeks now. And I believe we're up to 21 or 22,000 applications for folks who are on the waiting list. And IHCDA just announced last week that, or this week, I'm sorry, that next week they'll be closing the portal for rental assistance. So, you know, right now there's not really great systems, and it's, you know, technically with the courts being back open to accept eviction filings, there could be a lot of folks who are entitled to that assistance that they desperately need due to the impacts of COVID, but may have to be waiting for it and technically would be in breach of the lease. Of course, we're arguing for folks to say and show and prove to courts if they actually do have to go to court that they're waiting on these sort of assistant payments, but there's not a great system yet to help, you know, to help tenants, and all these programs, again, are kind of slow right now.
Amy, we often hear that Indiana is a landlord-friendly state. What does that mean, and how did it get that way?
Well, I can only speak on behalf of the Fair Housing Center and what we have viewed as far as the General Assembly. We're pretty active within the General Assembly, working with a number of partners that you've had discussions, you know, here with today. And what we have seen in the last 5 to 7 years is really a series of bills that have been introduced and passed by the General Assembly that have really tipped the law to be very in favor of the landlord when it comes to that landlord-tenant relationship. It just isn't equal on both sides anymore. For instance, we saw bills being passed that limited the ability of cities to be able to conduct effective inspection programs in order to evaluate if rental housing is meeting basic code. The legislature passed that. It really gutted some of our city inspection programs on the extent they're able to do that. Another bill that was passed that limited the ability of cities to provide discrimination protection for those who are using Section 8 vouchers or housing choice vouchers. As public housing units go away, more people are using these vouchers to find affordable housing and are being shut out, denied, just because they're going to be paying their rent through one of these vouchers. And then we also saw a bill that banned the ability of cities to do inclusionary zoning, basically mandating affordable housing development, and that can only be basically done through incentives. So, and then we saw, of course, last session, you know, we did a show with you all, you know, about that, when a bill was pending that went all the way to the governor in only his second veto of his administration that would have provided a lot of additional protections for landlords. We want to work with the landlords who want to work with us. There's great landlords out there, and there's not so great landlords out there, just like there's good tenants and tenants who could do a lot better. But our particular state really has tipped the bar way too far in favor of the landlords, and tenants just have few options in our state when they run into problems about a landlord not making repairs or not following landlord-tenant law effectively or retaliating against them for calling the code inspector or legal services.
Amy, I'm going to stick with you because we're losing you after this segment. What would you say is the most important thing you could push for at the State House to help with eviction issues here in Indiana?
Probably an eviction expungement of some kind. Some cities and states are starting to look at this, is that if the eviction wasn't justified, for instance, it was a filed eviction, not necessarily court-ordered, or it was from a certain time period ago, that essentially be moved from your record, much like criminal history expungements that are taking place as well, because of this data collection that's happening that is impacting so many families and their ability to find new housing, even when something happened that was no fault of their own.
Is that something that can happen now, but maybe the difficulty is a little high at this point?
Well, we've struggled in the Indiana General Assembly, you know, in recent years. We've had to be groups that are working on behalf of tenants and tenant rights have really been on the defensive and trying to push off the law getting even worse. There's been some great bills that have been introduced related to retaliation, giving a longer rights to cure where people can get their rent paid or provide for rent withholding, which is also not allowed in our state if there's, for instance, a big repair need. And a lot of great bills have been filed in recent years, and they never get a hearing. So it's my hope that coming out of the COVID pandemic and how housing is really the basis for everything in our lives, our access to health care, you know, transportation, jobs, schools, that our legislators will start to hear some of those bills and start to address this imbalance that currently exists between landlords and tenants in our state.
We're talking with experts and advocates today about evictions in Indiana. And after a quick break, we'll be back with all of our guests, except for Amy Nelson, who we just heard from. She's executive director of the Fair Housing Center of Central Indiana. Amy, thank you so much for taking the time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me.
I'm Matt Pelser, and we're back with more in just 2 minutes, rather. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Back now to our discussion on evictions in Indiana. As always, we would love your questions and comments for the discussion today. We're on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a short voicemail at 866-476-3881. 866-476-3881. We have our three guests with us. Laura Berry is executive director of the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Carrie Hyatt Bennett is legal counsel for the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence, and Brandon Beeler is director of the Housing Law Center at Indiana Legal Services. So, Brandon, how much of a challenge is it for people facing potential eviction to know what to do?
That is a great challenge, and even prior to the COVID pandemic, that's been a really big issue. At the very beginning of this year, when Chief Justice Rush made her State of the Judiciary address, she made a point at the end of last year to go sit in a Marion County small claims court to watch a day of eviction hearings. And one of the biggest things that she took away from it was the lack of parity. And we kind of discussed, or you kind of discussed this in an earlier segment of, you know, is it a landlord-friendly situation? And what she kind of addressed it as is it's a very transactional experience. In most cases, landlords are represented by an attorney. I think the day she was there, zero attendants had an attorney, and there were over 100 evictions on that day. So, you know, it's a challenge. The tenants don't know that, you know, the resources are not as widely available. You know, our office does offer them, but again, not everyone knows about us, even though we are a statewide organization and there are a number of legal aid organizations that provide information too. But, you know, that's a really big problem that we had prior to COVID and we still face now.
We have a listener voicemail now from Robin. Let's have a listen.
This is Robin from Plainfield. I was calling about the evictions. One of the things that Indiana has is on security deposits for owners, they can pretty much ask whatever they want. There used to be a law back in the day that said a security deposit, cannot be more than 1 month's rent. So when I was working in low-income housing, it was so hard for people to come up with 1 month's rent, let alone whatever crazy security deposit a landlord might ask for now. I think that should be struck from the law, and it should go back to no more than 1 month's rent. Thanks. Bye.
Thanks for that, Robin. Brandon, what do we know about what can be done on deposits?
Sure. That is certainly an issue that the caller raised. Yeah, as far as I know, there's no cap. You know, this is, again, part of that narrative of, you know, rather than saying it's landlord friendly, it's, you know, it's a right to contract. You know, Indiana is very open about contracts. And so in that sense, they would say, you know, that the tenant has the right to negotiate, even though we know that's more of not necessarily the case. You know, we in this country, and obviously in Indiana, and what Amy spoke about in the last session, you know, we have an affordable housing crisis, and that's part of it. The only with security deposits, the only time they're really capped are for federally subsidized programs, and that is, you know, for the most vulnerable low-income tenants who can qualify for those programs and have caps on what can be accepted. But yeah, that is certainly an issue.
Laura, what is the Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition?
The Hoosier Housing Needs Coalition is a partnership among many organizations who are working to end homelessness that has been brought together to do short and long-term strategies and advocacy to make certain that we are addressing the needs of Hoosier families, and both policy related and addressing these eviction needs. So we've come together to offer recommendations, look at strategies and policies to help both the state and local organizations, nonprofit organizations, to help figure out ways that we can leverage funding, policy initiatives to address their rental needs and supportive environment for Hoosier families.
Has there been enough, or is there enough collaboration happening throughout the state right now around these issues?
Well, that's a wonderful question. So I think that, you know, we're working really diligently, both as social service nonprofit organizations with our partners at IHCDA and here in Marion County, to do what we can to leverage dollars, funding, policy. But, you know, does more need to be done? Absolutely. I know Andrew brought up and Amy mentioned, and you've also talked about all of these applicants that have come into our portal seeking rental assistance and emergency funding. Indiana is leaving that portal open for another week, but as it was reported, I believe, in the IBJ yesterday and on the governor's report, you know, 30,000 Hoosier families have already applied to the Indiana Housing Now, and they're leaving that open up for one additional week. The reality is, if we do the math with the amount of money that is in there, it is unlikely that we can even assist the 30,000 Hoosiers who have applied for that emergency rental assistance. So, you know, we need to be doing more, leaving that portal up for another week with the anticipation that those who apply, last week we had 3,600 according to yesterday's report, there'll probably be even more that apply this week. We need to do better collaboration at looking at ways that we can find resources and other ways to support Hoosier families.
We have a listener voicemail now from Esther. Let's listen.
Hello, this is Esther from Hope, Indiana, and I was homeless as a child for a while, and it has affected my entire life. I stayed at a job that was too hard on my body, and just to keep the job all these years because of that fear of being homeless. Letting people get homeless is the wrong thing to do. It will cause people to turn to crime, to try to find food and disease, and it just has to be avoided. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Esther. Brandon, what do we know about the ripple effects of homelessness throughout a person's life?
Yeah, Matt, you know, and Esther raises an excellent point, and that's something that we should all be concerned about is, the significant ripples or consequences from what may be a tsunami of evictions is, frankly, you know, entering the state into a homelessness crisis. The concerns that were addressed at the beginning of the show on the harm that just a simple eviction filing can have on a tenant or a Hoosier on trying to find housing after the fact is a preventative hurdle that we see a lot with our client population, but, you know, that's really where this leads. And unless, you know, we can continue to, you know, I guess at this point, work with landlords, work with, you know, landlord groups and trying to mitigate and encourage settlements, encouraging not to file and encouraging folks to do payment plans. In addition, you know, in addition to the state programs and some of the great community groups and private funding of rental assistance that's being offered to Hoosiers, you know, Congress may still act. I know that the, you know, the HEROES Act has been sitting in the Senate for a while, but, you know, the Congress is set to, you know, the House is set to continue to try to get some federal rental assistance available to folks. And, you know, that may come, but hopefully it doesn't come too late.
Brandon, I want to bring up something. Oh, go right ahead, please.
Drew, can I follow up on that? You know, Esther brought up an incredible point. Homelessness, or I would say housing, should be a basic human right, because we know that housing stability is no different than food. The lack of housing for an individual is such an incredible risk factor for so many other things in our society. She talked about her inability to work and achieve. It also leads to, for our society, increased risk factors for poor health, poor educational outcome and attainment, increased violence use in our economy, increased drug use. So there is so much of a direct correlation between lack of stable housing and poor outcomes for individuals. So seeing housing as a basic human right reduces the risk factors for so many other instances. And in every factor, we would reduce crime, we would reduce domestic violence, we would reduce sexual assault, we would reduce child maltreatment if people were provided the basics, housing and food stabilities overall. I mean, that investment is such a cheaper investment for our Hoosier families than not.
And thanks for that follow-up. We appreciate these voicemails that are coming in, too. And you can leave one as well, though we have just a few minutes left, at 866-476-3881. Here's one from a listener named Gregory.
Hi, this is Gregory from Indianapolis, Indiana. I remember hearing something about a rent assistance program, $500 a month for the next 4 months for people affected by COVID. Heard about that once, but then I have not heard any more talk about that, and that could be very helpful. Thank you. Have a good day.
Brandon, do we know anything about the rental assistance program Gregory's referring to?
Yes. Gregory calling from Indianapolis. Marion County, or the city of Indianapolis, set up a rental assistance fund that's for Marion County tenants, or for tenants. That is the right amount. There are some very minimal qualifications to it. One of them is that the landlord does have to agree, and the landlord does have the right to refuse the funds if the landlord doesn't want to accept them. Currently, it's at indierent.org, I believe, is the website. That's what I was saying. That program, for about 5 weeks now, has been on a waiting list only due to the amount of requests they received for rental assistance. I believe it's up to $21,000, but we are advising tenants that if they've not already applied, to get on that waiting list to apply, because I believe the city, as of yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, announced that they are putting $7.5 million more into that fund.
Laura Berry, we have a question from Dick on Facebook who asks, is there a huge pool of people waiting to rent these units? I'm assuming he means these units that people are being evicted from. How is it beneficial to all the landlords to remove these renters? Do we know anything about that? Are they making room for new potential renters?
Well, one, I think that'll be a follow-up question for Carrie, but, you know, the moratorium was just lifted a week ago, so evictions really have not happened yet. I mean, as Carrie alluded to, you know, it requires a court process for doing so to remove these individuals from these properties. And our issue that has been raised by Amy and repeated is, there just aren't enough cost-effective or affordable housing units in the state of Indiana. So will there be units available for rent? Absolutely, there may be. But the point is to keep people stably housed, because once we get these evictions on the book, it's going to be hard for individuals to become new renters, and we're going to have an increase in homelessness. Carrie may be able to answer your second question, a second part of that question.
Yeah, Carrie, the second part was, how is it beneficial to all the landlords to remove these renters?
Well, I think that's one of the problematic issues here, is because a lot of these rental assistance programs are available if the landlord agrees to participate in it. Whereas filing an eviction is probably easier. It's probably something that they already have a process for doing. They probably have counsel on retainer. And 30 years ago, I was a young attorney working at a law firm doing a lot of eviction work. And I know it can be potentially income generating to be able to evict a tenant and possibly get any rent that's owed and possibly any damages and maybe get a judgment. All that is devastating for the tenant. And our hope is that the landlords in good faith decide to try to work it out or agree to take this money. But again, I think one of the concerns about it is the landlord has to agree to be able to take the emergency money. And my concern is a lot of landlords won't necessarily buy into that, and they will just choose to do what they normally do, and that's file an eviction. And I want to also comment about the backlog of the court system now, considering that so many courts have been either shut down or been on virtual because of COVID-19. To add on to that, the onslaught of eviction filings on top of that is very overwhelming for our court system and quite a challenge for us systemically.
Carrie, while I have you, I want to go back to something that Amy referred to in the last segment, and that is expungement. Is it particularly difficult or even impossible to expunge an eviction from someone's record right now? She seemed to express that she would like for that process to be a little easier.
Well, that's a really good question, and that's one of the things that we are trying to do with our partners, the Indiana Legal Aid Society, Brandon's group, and the Neighborhood Christian Legal Clinic. Chase Haller is their housing attorney there. They and the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence, meaning me, we're trying to basically create a case of first impression that will allow for the expungement of evictions. I don't think it has to be a statutory change. I think it is allowable under Indiana law. It is just not a common practice, or I'm not even sure it's been done. So, Brandon, if you have any updates on that, but we have spent a tremendous amount of time at the Indiana General Assembly honing and fine-tuning how we can expunge criminal convictions and criminal arrests that don't result in conviction. I think we need to extend that second chance law and include evictions in that.
Brandon, in about 30
Carrie,
seconds.
I've done it once. I got it one, and I was not an expungement. So expungement is kind of, which I do agree it should be under that purview, but under Indiana Administrative Code, under Rule 9, there's a ceiling of court cases, and actually it was a case involving domestic violence. But one time I was able to do it, I've petitioned certain courts to try it in other circumstances and have been less successful. But again, it's as Carrie said, it's not something commonly done. It's something that has a high burden for the courts to reach, to meet. But it's certainly something that would be very helpful to have something like that.
One time in your entire career, Brandon?
One time ever, I got it sealed. It was a pretty egregious thing, but yes.
I want to thank everyone for taking the time today. Laura Berry is Executive Director of the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Carrie Hyatt-Bennett is Legal Counsel for the Indiana Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Thanks, Carrie.
You bet.
And thanks to Brandon Beeler, Director of the Housing Law Center at Indiana Legal Services. We appreciate it.
Great. Thank you, Matt.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Adam Gross is our technical director and composed our theme. Our podcast can be found wherever you get podcasts. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.